Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Political hitmen.
I'm Howie Silberger, your political hitman right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me, and please join me in the chat room on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, where the chat is always fun and exciting. It's always interesting what people are talking about on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. This is a live show, which means that you could call in. Numbers to call in North America, 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 02-650-0151. Feel free to call in and join me in conversation during this show. So a couple of weeks ago, I did a show where I talked about a blood libel, where the government of New York City was accusing the Hasidic community of spreading COVID-19. And they actually showed a picture during a press conference of Hasidic people praying in New York City and blamed them for the massive spread of COVID in New York. And I called it a blood libel, and I stand by that, but I might have overspoken. I want to talk to you about why I think that maybe I might have overspoken, and that perhaps, just sometimes, communities do things that brings the attention to them. So maybe the attention of the American authorities, the New York authorities, was justified. I hate to say it. It almost hurts me to say it. But maybe them pointing a finger at the New York Hasidic community was a justified thing. We'll take a look at that. Jonathan Pollard was released from his probation. He is now a free man after 35 years and incarcerated in the United States. He's a free man to travel, to live wherever he wants. And I want to take a look at the Jonathan Pollard story. Actually, Haaretz, surprisingly, had an excellent article on that. I want to share that article with you and discuss that with you. So all that and a whole lot more right here on Political Hitman. Feel free to join me in the chat room at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You could call me in North America, 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 02-650-0151. Once again, those numbers are on the top of the page on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I'm Howie Silberger. This is Political Hitman.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Political hitman.
I'm Howie Silberger, your political hitman, right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Feel free to join me in the chat room at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. It is a live show, which means you could call in. Numbers to call in North America are 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 02-650-0151. So a couple of weeks ago, I did a show where I called out the mayor and the governor of New York, and said that they were committing a blood libel against the Jewish community. And I honestly felt at the time that they were unfairly pointing out the Jewish community and unfairly blaming the Jewish community, the Orthodox Jewish community living in New York, particularly in Williamsburg and Crown Heights. But more particularly in Williamsburg, they were blaming them for the spread of COVID, and basically saying that they were the initial spreaders of COVID, and they were the ones that were causing the massive outbreak of COVID in New York City. I called it a modern day blood libel because when you make false accusations against Jews, saying that they are the sole spreaders of a deadly disease that is akin to a blood libel. Blood libel that, you know, hundreds of years ago, there were blood libels against Jews saying that they did all sorts of things that hurt non-Jews. And so this was the akin to a blood libel. And I called it just that. And I honestly believe that that the New York governor and the mayor were wrong in what they did. In fact, the mayor actually apologized for his role in the blood libel. But now I'm starting to have some second thoughts. I'm starting to look at the situation a little differently. And the reason for that was an event that happened last week. A massive wedding in Williamsburg. So the Jewish Telegraph Agency tells the story, and I want to share that story with you. After one massive wedding that was scaled back under pressure and another one that went off in secret, one of the most important leaders of the Satmir Hasidic community delivered a speech that amounted to a declaration of war. Here's the quote. Well, here's one of the quotes. "We endured three difficult weeks. Indeed, the school administrators, not only here but also in other places, very nearly capitulated because it is exceedingly difficult to do battle with the government. It takes enormous amount of energy. Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum, the leader of a Satmir faction based in Kiryat Joel in New York, said in a speech which was printed on flyers and posted in the Brooklyn Borough Park neighborhood earlier this month. It continued, "And thank God we remained unified. We won't surrender, we won't close down, and indeed, we didn't close down neither the boys' school nor the girls' school nor the yeshivas, neither the large ones nor the small ones. Everything proceeded as usual. God came to our aid, and the authorities realized they were dealing with stubborn people." This week, the New York Post reported about a Satmir wedding, one of Teitelbaum's grandsons, that was organized and held in secret this month in Williamsburg, with thousands in attendance. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo called the plans totally deceitful, and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said the synagogue that hosted the event will be fined $15,000. When asked why they didn't stop the event, de Blasio answered, "Well, New York's a big city, so it fell under our radar." As they were making their comments, last-minute planning was unfolding for another wedding, this time in Kiryas Joel. Reporters for the Daily Beast observed people coming in and out of a wedding hall on Monday night, with workers bringing in pallets of bottled water. The Post reported Tuesday that the state police were investigating the wedding. Even with all the attention they have drawn over the past several days, the weddings are not an anomaly in the Hasidic community, despite being in clear violation of the state's rules against large gatherings during the pandemic. Weddings have been happening in Brooklyn for months, with precautions such as covering windows with paper and guards at the door in case an inspector shows up to keep them from being detected. Members of the Hasidic community say that the weddings aren't likely to stop, in part because cases are not translating into large numbers of hospitalizations and deaths seen in the spring. Also, the push to stop them is coming from outsiders. Here's a quote. "I don't think the government can do much, to be honest," said Mayor Levin, a Hasidic writer who grew up in the Williamsburg Satmir community. Some critics say the lack of secular education in the Hasidic community is to blame. In fact, Rabbi Teitelbaum himself linked the defiance of COVID rules with the ongoing fight against government attempts to increase secular education in their Jewish schools in his speech, which was given at a post-wedding celebration following the secret Williamsburg wedding earlier this month. "They want to change the education of our sons and daughters. God forbid," the Satmir leader said, adding that, "We will not capitulate and we will not change. We are not going to change. We will say it again and again. Klal Yisrael will take no orders or anything of the sort, whatever form it might take, whatever will come," he said, insisting that the Satmir education system would remain the same with minimal secular education. Naftuli Moster, executive director of Yafid, an organization advocating for secular education in Jewish schools, called the speech evidence that leaders of the community believe they are above the law. "When someone tells you who they are, believe them. If there's any doubt as to how the Hasidic leaders feel about the government regulation, here's the proof," Moster said. Hasidic life, by the way, it's obvious that Hasidic life has never been conducive to staying at home. For large families common in the Hasidic communities, keeping children home from school is not practical in cramped New York City apartments, particularly without tablets and computers to keep them occupied. Much of the life is communal spaces like schools and synagogues, making social distancing all but impossible. and the increasing influence of pro-Trump media has seeded skepticism of the coronavirus. Now, residents of the Hasidic Williamsburg community have largely returned to pre-pandemic life. But in the case of the continued large weddings and lack of compliance with interventions as simple as mask wearing, community leaders are playing a crucial role in encouraging defiance, according to some Hasidim. They take the lead from the Rebbe. So if their Rebbe isn't walking around with their mask, they're not going to think it's important, an administrator of a health clinic in Williamsburg said. At the large Williamsburg wedding held in secret, the groom was one of the top Sefer rabbi's grandsons. Who's not going to go? The clinic administrator asked. Now, New York State has banned large gatherings like weddings throughout the pandemic, but the scrutiny of gatherings increased in Brooklyn in the past several months as COVID cases ticked upwards in the borough, including in heavily Orthodox neighborhoods. As COVID tests positively rates increased in Borough Park and Midwood in October, Governor Cuomo created a new system meant to target micro-clusters of COVID cases. That system included new colored zones, with the heaviest restrictions in red zones where schools and non-essential businesses would be shut down and synagogue capacity severely limited, and less stringent restrictions in orange and yellow zones. Now, the Williamsburg administrator of the clinic said that there has been a decrease in patients coming in for COVID testing at her clinic over the past 2 months. She wasn't certain why, but she said it did seem to coincide when the schools in Borough Park and Midwood were closed and when they threatened to close the schools in Williamsburg. Even though Borough Park and Midwood were kept in the red zones for several weeks, some Jewish schools remained open in a repeat of what happened in the spring when students attended classes in synagogue basements or entered school buildings through side doors to avoid detention. Testing efforts, too, seem to be oriented towards lowering the positivity rate with a singular goal in mind, to keep schools and synagogues open. Flyers circulated in Williamsburg warning that no one should be tested. Others, however, called on healthy people, especially those who had tested positive for coronavirus antibodies, to be tested to drive down the positivity rate. Lemi Marcus, a nurse practitioner who lives in Borough Park, said the testing strategies appeared to be more about averting government restrictions than public health. In October, she said that there were efforts to test community members in large numbers to drive down the positivity rates, as these rates were being used as the metric to determine whether an area would remain a red or an orange zone, keeping schools closed. Marcus believes that those who are sick are still avoiding testing now. She says she often gets texts from community members with low oxygen levels who are trying to avoid being hospitalized. When the effort is to keep down cases in the community, no one wants to be that one that changes the narrative, she said. But Marcus says the community shouldn't continue to hold weddings and expect schools to stay open. If you want to have your cake and eat it too, you need to implement some changes, she said. But those who grew up in the community have little hope for change. Sam Katz, a research fellow at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, who was raised in Borough Park, Sackmere community, frequently talks to members of the community about the pandemic. Katz said that the fact that they haven't seen the other shoe drop in the form of another wave of hospitalizations and deaths has made it hard to convince people to take the threat of the virus very seriously. Tell me who's dying. Give me a name, he said. They ask him. For some reason, the impact of April and May didn't translate to a cautiousness and a fear of the virus. It translated to, we've been through it. It's hard to know how many real cases there are if people won't be tested. The clinic administrator in Williamsburg said she has not seen any noticeable spike in cases in the weeks since the massive wedding there. And there is the possibility that a majority of the guests already had COVID, making it unlikely they would be infected again. A lot of them probably had some type of immunity, the administrator said. The men who likely attended, she said, some 80% of men 18 to 55 who have been tested for antibodies at her clinic tested positive, indicating a previous infection. COVID becomes less scary for you when 80% of the people you know had it, the Hasidic writer Labin said. Everybody you know already had it. They forget about the people who died. He added, people who died don't have a voice anymore. So here we are. The Hasidic community in Williamsburg may have a point in saying that since 80% of their community already had the virus and 80% of the people who tested for antibodies have the antibodies, so they've been infected before, so the chances of them getting the virus again is extremely low. They may have a point that these kind of restrictions are a little heavy-handed. But at the same time, why tempt fate? If the rules are the rules, we should follow them. We should follow them not because we might spread the disease to other people. We should follow them because it is a huge desecration of God's name not to follow them. When other people, when non-Jews, feel that you are responsible for getting them sick and potentially, God forbid, killing people, then maybe you should pull back a little bit and take a look at the bigger picture instead of the micro picture. Take a look at the macro picture and understand that we're not the only ones living in society. And sometimes we have to curtail what we do in order to stop the people from hating us. I'm Howie Silverman's Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radio from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Political Hitman.
I'm Howie Silverger, your political hitman, right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Join me in the chat room at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Feel free to call in. I'd love to hear from you. Numbers to call in North America, 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 02-6500-151. Those are the numbers to call to get in on the conversation right here on Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. So as I was saying just before the break, I believe that maybe, the people running the Jewish community in Williamsburg, the Satmir community, maybe, just maybe, they might have a point that if they have the immunity, then maybe not listen to the government or expecting, you know, a little bit of leniency from the government is not outrageous. But at the same time, as I said before, I really don't think that we should be promoting, and we should be projecting an image that people might think that the Jewish community is doing some harm to other communities. So by not projecting that image, maybe we should be following the rules just to not project that image. Maybe we should be thinking about that. Let's go to the phones. Antonio from Washington is on the phone. Hello, Antonio. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Antonio?
I'm good. I disagree with you on regarding the governor and mayor, because they are politicians and they should know better, and they incite hatred. And when Black Lives Matter or the riots and protests, they did not do anything but support it. So why can't the Jews have their day and celebrate?
I agree with you to a certain extent that they were wrong. I mean, Bill de Blasio apologized for what he said about the Jewish community. Governor Cuomo hasn't really apologized yet. I don't think he ever will. His ego is too large for him to go out publicly to apologize. So I don't think Cuomo is ever going to apologize. Cuomo actually did the faux pas. He actually promoted the blood libel by putting up pictures of Jews praying during his press conference. So I agree with you. The anti-Jewism of the New York governor's office is obvious to me, and I agree with that. But I also see the other side. I also see the community, especially in Williamsburg, the Satmir community in Williamsburg and Kiryas Joel. I actually see them instigating, and so when we go to instigate and then people react to that, that's one thing. When we are minding our own business and doing our own thing, and we're not instigating, we're not doing it just to, you know, to give it to the government, and we're doing our own thing, and then the government comes to pick on us, then that's totally something else. So at this point, I think that the Williamsburg community is actually actively trying to instigate the government. I mean, it's obvious by the Rebbe's speech that that's what they're doing. That's their goal. So I don't think it should be a planned thing. I beg your pardon?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, I can't hear you.
Go ahead. I said, go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
So I don't think I don't think. Let me just finish. Then I don't think that we should be instigating. So like you brought up Black Lives Matters, and I agree with you that that not cracking down on those protests and those riots tells me how political these lockdowns and these restrictions are, and they really are political. They have nothing to do with public health. They're all political. So I have no objections to I have no objections to what you said there, but when it comes to the Jewish community, we should not be provoking. So we should be stepping back and saying, okay, we're supposed to be a light upon the nations, and being a light upon the nations means that we sometimes have to curtail what we do in order to project a good image to the rest of the country. That's the argument I'm making.
But also, I feel that this country, United States, is still like individuals are trying to make this country into become a communist country with socialism and all that stuff going on, and perhaps the rabbi. I'm just seeing him, perhaps he's seen between the lines that direction it's going, but it could be changed.
You're right. Now, I'm not saying that the Satmar community should change the way they live. It's not the argument I'm making. You're 100% right. They shouldn't be changing the way they live. But they should be changing their public image on the way they
exactly.
display themselves, is what I'm saying. I mean, you know, it's all about PR, right? So, mm-hmm. so Black Lives Matter came up with some comment. I mean, they're a radical Marxist crazy group, but they came up with some comments that would actually came up with some policy points that would appeal to the mass majority of people. Like they even came up with stuff that even I said, well, you know, they have a point, but they're crazy. So them demonstrating and them protesting and the government not cracking down on that was wrong, 100% wrong. They should be apologizing for that. That was discriminatory and totally wrong. But at the same time, they were trying to project themselves. I'm not talking about Antifa, just Black Lives Matter. They're trying to project themselves as a respectable organization. When you come out publicly, when you come out publicly and say that we're defying the government and that we're going to stand against the government, we're going to fight the government in every way we can. That's not projecting a light upon the nations. I'm sorry.
But also the Constitution have, I think that the Constitution with us going that direction with state and church conflict with each other. And that's going to be the challenge.
So tell me, Antonio, then, where are the massive protests of Roman Catholics on the street because the churches were closed? Where are the massive protests of Muslims on the street? Where are the massive protests of Hindus on the street? I don't see it. Where are these people? They've voluntarily, most Americans have voluntarily given up their constitutional rights. So if you give it away to the government and you allow the government to take your constitutional rights, then you can't really complain that they keep doing it and they keep cracking down more and more. I mean,
and that's the direction that it's going, and people are sleeping and not aware of what's going on. It goes too late.
I agree with
and
you. Look, they have to buy them, right?
It's sad because when I look at things and I'm like, wow. And chat with people, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're really that stupid. You know, because they believe what they believe in, but there's no, they're ignorant. There's no excuse for it. And I just feel like the mayor and Bill, whatever his name, I call him Big Bird, but his apology will not be accepted because he knew what he was doing before he
You're right.
spoke talking. He thought it. He's a politician. He's been trained to lie.
You're 100% right, and I don't think that anybody should accept the apology from de Blasio, and I don't think anybody should accept apology from Cuomo if he ever gets off his high horse and actually apologizes. They shouldn't be accepted. These guys should not be reelected. Forget about accepted. These guys should be thrown out of office.
I hope so.
But
I really do hope
it's not
so.
Happening.
I really do hope so. I mean, something has to give, you know. Enough is enough. I mean, come on.
Antonio, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Appreciate your call.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Antonio from Washington. Thank you so much, Antonio. Give me a call if you want to get in on the conversation. Feel free to call in. North America, 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 02-650-0151. You could get those numbers on the top of the page at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And, of course, you could join me in the chat room at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. So I agree with Antonio. Antonio is 100% right. The Constitution of the United States of America allows, separates church and state. The state should not be dictating what the church does, and the church should not be dictating what the state does. So the state should not have any power over telling a synagogue that you can't open or that you can't have a wedding. The state has decided to override the Constitution, and I don't know how constitutional that is. They've decided to override the Constitution for public health reasons. So because COVID is such a dangerous disease, they've decided to override the Constitution of the United States and forget about the separation of church and state. And so the state's now controlling the church. Now, if the Sadmir community is fighting back against that, then be clear about that. Then saying, look, there's a separation of church and state. We are a synagogue. You have no right to tell us what to do. I could respect that a lot more than what they're doing. Don't have clandestine weddings. Don't go and try to hide and try to get around the rules. If you want to oppose the rules, go into the streets and oppose the rules. You don't agree with what the government is doing or what the government is saying, that's fine. Then you have the constitutional right to oppose what the government is saying. Don't do it clandestinely. Don't hide. Do it in the public. Do it in the open. Let the public and let the government know what you feel. Doing it, hiding and doing it, it just feels wrong. It feels like you're doing something wrong. If you're not doing anything wrong, if you're following the Constitution, you're following the laws as they're written, not the public policies as they're dictated, but the laws as they're written, then you should do it publicly. So I think that drawing the attention to themselves by trying to do things underground and try to do things clandestinely is 100% wrong, and this is where my issue is. So while I still believe that Governor Cuomo committed a blood libel when he accused the Hasidic community of being the sole spreaders of COVID, knowing that other communities in the city were also spreading COVID, and it wasn't only Jews that got COVID. While I feel that was wrong, I also feel the Satmar community is not handling this properly. So maybe they should back up, retake a look at what they're doing, and then decide to do things a little more openly, decide to do things a little more honestly, and decide to do things to spread light upon the nation. I'm Howie Somerville, this political hitman, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentico, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Political hitman.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman, right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Join me in the chat room at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Call in. In North America, the number is 301-768-4841. In Israel, the number is 0265001. And I'd love to hear what you have to say. I'd love to talk to you. Now, I found an article on Haaretz. I normally don't. I don't share articles from Haaretz. I don't think they're a legitimate news source, so I generally don't share articles from Haaretz, and I don't talk about them on the show for sure. But this article here was actually decent. It talks about Jonathan Pollard, and I thought I'd share it. Now, just a little bit of background. I've been a big advocate of the release of Jonathan Pollard for years, since the early 90s. I led many, many protests to demand that the American government release a Jewish national hero, Jonathan Pollard. I put together I put together many protests in coordination with the Pollard people, and so I have an intimate understanding of the Pollard case. I read this article from Haaretz, and I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to share it with you. Five times. That's how often the Israeli government and its intelligence community betrayed Jonathan Pollard, the American Jewish spy, who over the weekend finally became a completely free man 35 years after his arrest in Washington. Due to these betrayals, Pollard received a life sentence for spying for Israel. He served 30 years in prison and another 5 years under harsh restrictions that confined him to living in a specific part of New York, a nighttime curfew, and regular monitoring. The original sin was when Rafi Eitan, who in the 1980s headed LECAM, Israel Scientific Liaison Bureau, decided to activate Pollard. The second betrayal took place when Eitan and his assistants handled their assets negligently and didn't prepare an escape plan for him in case the operation went wrong. Then the Israeli governing coalition betrayed him when it lied to the Reagan administration by claiming that activating Pollard was a rogue operation. The fourth time was when Israel agreed to cooperate with the U.S. authorities, but did not condition this on the demand that Pollard not receive a life sentence. And the fifth came after Israel had already agreed to cooperate and return to the U.S. authorities all the secret documents Pollard had transferred to his handlers. But then the political leadership and defense establishment tried to outsmart and deceive the U.S. legal and intelligence establishment, thereby adding insult to injury. All these activities took place during the period of rotation governments of prime ministers, Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Shamir from 1984 to 1988, and defense ministers Yitzhak Rabin and Moshe Arends. The other main players directly or indirectly involved at the time were Eitan, Yosef Yager, and Ilan Ravid, LACAM agents who operated under the diplomatic cover of scientific attachés in the Israeli consulate in New York and in the Israeli embassy in Washington. Colonel Aviam Sela, the Israeli Air Force pilot who introduced Pollard to Eitan, IAF Commander Major General Amos Lapidot, Israel Defense Force Chief of Staff Moshe Levy, Military Intelligence Head Ehud Barak, and Mossad Chief Nahum Adomi. Jonathan Pollard stole documents. He was a naval intelligence analyst. He stole documents and gave them to Israel. These documents helped thwart many attacks in Israel. In fact, it even helped Israel attack the PLO headquarters in Tunisia and destroy the PLO headquarters in Tunisia, putting the PLO out of commission for years before they were able to regroup and restart again. Pollard applied for a job at the CIA, but was turned down, and he therefore was recruited by Rafi Eitan and company to become a spy for Israel. He was reluctant about it, but he did it. He did it with his wife. They were his first wife. They were both involved in the spying, and Pollard was eventually caught. When he was caught, of course, we know that the American government threw the full book at him. He had no reprieve. He had no release. He had no chance of surviving. Chance of escaping. He went to an Israeli consulate. As he knew the FBI was chasing him, they wanted to arrest him. He ran to an Israeli consulate, and the consulate was ordered to throw him out rather than the Israelis saving him and shipping him off to Israel. The consulate was ordered to throw him out, to remove him from the consulate. Rafi Eitan made that order. And Pollard was removed from the consulate and arrested by the FBI, and then spent 35 years in prison and another 5 years paroled, and now he is a free man. And we say, thank God he's a free man. The sentence was a travesty of justice. It really was. The stuff that Jonathan Pollard gave to the Israelis, the information he gave to the Israelis, was information the American government was supposed to give them anyway, which they didn't. They were betraying their deal with Israel. They had a cooperation deal, an intelligence cooperation deal, that they were betraying with Israel. Pollard was giving them immaterial that should have been handed over by the American authorities anyway. This came out in the trial. So we had a situation where a spy gave materials, and he was a spy, there's no question. Did he deserve punishment? Of course, all spies deserve punishment. There's treason to the country, so they deserve punishment. He was giving classified information to a foreign country. Even though it was an ally, it was still a foreign country. So anyone who does that deserves to be arrested and deserves some punishment. Now, spending the amount of time Jonathan Pollard spent in prison, in the conditions he was forced to live in prison, that's not so acceptable, in my opinion. That should have been mitigated. And the amount of years he spent in prison should have been mitigated too, especially since he got more time in prison than people who spied for foreign countries did. People who spied for Russia got less time than Jonathan Pollard got in prison. And so one has to wonder, who did he really get upset? Who did he really piss off? Excuse the expression, but that's the question. In order to get a sentence quite like that one. And so the answer was quite simple. The intelligence community of Israel were embarrassed that they were caught, so they abandoned him. The Americans didn't really know what to do with him, and Caspar Weinberger was embarrassed that his Defense Department, he was the Secretary of State, and his Defense Department had dropped the ball and let this low-level military analyst get all these classified documents and ship them off. And he wanted to make Pollard into an example for other people. He wanted to use Pollard as a scapegoat example so that other people would think twice before putting their name forward to spy for foreign countries. In fact, it was so obvious that Weinberger wanted to do that the CIA hung up a portrait of Pollard. They hung up a portrait of the guy, the spy, in the hallway leading to the interrogation room. As if to say, anybody walking to that interrogation room, if you're a spy, remember what happened to this guy. So now that Pollard's free, he's free to move to Israel. Now he's declared that he wants to move to Israel, but I'm confused as to why. A country that betrayed him as much as Israel did, a country that abandoned him in his time of need. For years, they refused to admit that he was a spy, and then when they did, they just half-heartedly tried to get him out of prison. So one would wonder why Jonathan Pollard would want to go to Israel. And the only reason I could think of is that he is a Jew, and Israel is his country, is his land. So regardless of who the government is, regardless of what the government did to him, regardless of anything, a Jew should be in Israel. And I think that's what Pollard was thinking. I think that's what Pollard is thinking. So his wife is sick, and he said that he will go to Israel as soon as his wife is healthy enough to travel. And I wish him the best. Anybody who served 35 years in prison and lived to get out of it, anybody who served 35 years in prison and is able to tell the story, I wish the best. So I wish the best to the Pollards. I hope that his wife gets healthy, his second wife gets healthy, and that they are able to make Aliyah as soon as possible, get out of the States and start a fresh life in Israel. I look forward to that. Now, does that mean that I agree with what he did? Of course not. Does that mean that, to a certain extent, I agree with what he did to a certain extent, because what he did saved lives, and any way you can to save lives, any opportunity you have to save lives, you should use that opportunity. So I agree that he did save lives, and that's something that we should acknowledge. But I also agree that if he was passing on information that didn't particularly save lives, if he was putting other people's lives in danger, then maybe he should have been punished. But you know, he was caught spying, so breaking the laws of the land you live in, you have to suffer the consequences. But 35 years was an awful long time. And we didn't see, with Jonathan Pollard, we did not see the kind of protest you saw with Shalom Rabashkin. You did not see the kind of protest you, the kind of lobbying that you had with other people who were arrested by the government. The religious community really just did not respond to Pollard. They didn't care. And why? Well, I asked that question, and the answer I got was quite simply, he's not one of us. He's a Zionist. There you go. I'm Howie Silberger. I want to thank you for joining me here on Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm on every week, and I hope you join me every week right here on Israel News Talk Radio. It is always fun to be on the air. We are live. The show's always live, so feel free to contact me. Go to the go to my page on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I have an email address. Feel free to send me an email. I will respond when I have a chance, and I appreciate you tuning in. So until next week, I bid you all a good week. I hope you stay safe. I hope you are happy and healthy. And I will see you again next week on Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.